This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. A few weeks ago, the news was focused on Barack Obama and his birth certificate. Critics doubted that he was born in America. They wanted to release his, or wanted him anyway, to release his Hawaii long-form birth certificate to prove his citizenship. Well, the president released that birth certificate, and some were satisfied, but for others, seeing that was not enough. And now, in the wake of Osama bin Laden's death, new obsession has taken hold. A lot of people wonder if the infamous terrorist is really dead, and even confirmation from al-Qaeda has not been enough to assuage their skepticism. What is it about conspiracy theories like these that make them catch on, and why do people persist in believing them despite evidence to the contrary? Well, we have somebody who might answer some of those questions. Kenneth Kitts is a professor of political science at the University of North Carolina at Pembroke. He's the author of the book Presidential Commissions and National Security, The Politics of Damage Control. Ken, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. It's a pleasure to be with you.
In your research on presidential commissions, you have come across a number of conspiracy theories. What makes a successful conspiracy theory?
I think you have to start with an interesting topic, something that captures the public's imagination. And I think flowing from that, a storyline begins to take root. And it's been pretty difficult, at least for me, to predict which storylines are going to give rise to conspiracy theories. And then amongst those, you know, which ones are going to have legs, you know, or get traction. So it's pretty difficult to predict. But at heart, you know, I think when you start with a controversial subject, or again something that captures the public imagination, you're on your way. Then
got to be big, probably. Yeah. Well, let's go back a little bit. You learned about the conspiracy that goes back to World War II, Pearl Harbor. A lot of people think that Roosevelt allowed that to happen in order to force the United States, which had been reluctant to get involved in the war, to get in the war. Roosevelt allowed it to happen. Conspiracy theory. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, absolutely, My research on Pearl Harbor, I got into it because of my interest in what became known as the Roberts Commission. Perhaps the first investigation of the attack on Pearl Harbor was headed by Supreme Court Justice Owen Roberts, and Roosevelt put that panel together. It was a 5-member panel about a week after the attack, and they actually went to Hawaii, went to the scene of the attack, spent about a month poking around, and then they flew back to the West Coast, took a train, and issued a report to Roosevelt in late January of 1942. It was that report that kind of sought to put the issue to bed about, you know, how could this happen? And the Roberts Commission laid primary blame for the attack at the foot of the military commanders in Hawaii. But it did not put to rest the rumors and the conspiracy theories that there must have been something else at work here. And as you said, it was such a landmark event that there were people that just wouldn't accept that this was a simple military misstep. And it did give rise to what became known as the advance knowledge conspiracy theory, that the president must have been in the know about this.
And of course, part of the problem here is that if you believe there's a conspiracy and that people in the highest places in government are the conspirators, well, no amount of proof is going to make you or convince you, because after all, these are the people who are hiding the truth from you.
Absolutely. And at that point, the conspiracy theory becomes an article of faith. It becomes a theological belief that people hold on to with almost religious fervor. And as with any religious belief system, confrontation with the facts is almost irrelevant. It becomes an article of faith.
Though there is another factor involved here. For instance, in the 1930s, we know that the National Socialist Party burned the Reichstag and managed to pin the blame on the communists. They got away with that for a while, and then it turns out, wow, somebody pulled the wool over our eyes for a long time. And then we find out, so some conspiracies work.
Sure, and I think that also feeds the popular distrust or the notion that, you know, some conspiracies are real, because we have documented evidence of cases where you know, important information was withheld, or where governments actually sought to deceive the public. And you mentioned the case of Germany. There have been cases within the United States where governments have lied, where governments have deceived. And so when you look at those incidents, it's perhaps not too difficult to understand popular mistrust.
Also, if you take the Kennedy assassination, Warren Commission report, and in the immediate aftermath of the assassination of John Kennedy, lone gunman, no conspiracy. And for a while, anybody who would say, oh, no, there had to be more than one gunman involved, there had to be a conspiracy, they were dismissed as wackos. Turns out they were right. Congress did an investigation in the 1970s and concluded there was a conspiracy, most likely, and there was most likely more than one gunman. The conspiracy theorists were right.
Yes, and of course, the initial investigation in the wake of Kennedy's murder was the Warren Commission, impaneled about a month after the events in Dallas. But if you go back and look at the origins of the Warren Commission, there was an assistant attorney general who at the very outset, before the members had even been selected, was telling people that we have to bring this commission into existence in order to convince the people that Oswald was the assassin. So you could argue that going into that investigation, the real objective was a fact-finding and analysis as much as it was a sales job to the American people.
More recently, we've had a lot of conspiracy theories around the terror attacks of September 11th. What are some of those theories, and how difficult are they to put to rest?
There's been a number of them. I guess that you know, the most important ones tend to coalesce around, you know, the notion that Bush knew, kind of reflective of the Roosevelt knew the Japanese were coming, you know, in 1941. A particular variant of the 9/11 conspiracy theories is what's known as the false flag operation. And that theory would hold that there were operatives within the U.S. government that portrayed themselves as al-Qaeda operatives, brought off the attack in order to generate a predetermined outcome, that being presumably the move into Afghanistan and later Iraq with military operations.
So that's the one side. The one side says the whole thing was designed to do this, to get the United States to do al-Qaeda's will. Other conspiracy theories sort of along the lines of burning the Reichstag, we can go ahead and blame our enemies and then wreak havoc on them. In other words, perhaps somebody in this administration in the U.S. knew, and it would prompt, or Pearl Harbor, part of that conspiracy. This is a way to move people into action.
Absolutely, yes.
And we're using these terms, and we often use them in the press, to put these theories to rest, as though any time someone suggests there's a conspiracy, it must be wacky and there must be proof to the contrary, so any conspiracy theory should be put to rest. That strikes me as somewhat dangerous and a little anti-intellectual as well.
Well, I would agree with you. I think if you view, you know, different points of view regarding conspiracies kind of on a giant continuum, on one end you have the kind of the black helicopter crowd that we can't ever trust government and that every major event must be the work of a sinister hidden hand operating behind the scenes. The other end of the spectrum would be what I call the blind faith crowd, that we take every official pronouncement at face value, that we're not questioning free-thinking citizens. I find that equally objectionable, and I find that not compatible with the ideals of democracy. I think questioning is healthy.
It is interesting, then, isn't it, what we do with actual, tangible, physical evidence and the way it's contextualized. In many cases, I suppose, taking a look at your research, what I draw from this is that ultimately there's no amount of evidence once we're emotionally attached to a story and engaged in the story. We tend to find the evidence that supports our side and ignore the evidence that challenges us.
Yeah, I think we do have to be careful about not painting everyone with too broad a brush. I think that, for example, with the Obama birth certificate controversy, there are probably moderates within that camp who might now believe that Obama was born here because of the delivery of the long-form birth certificate. But to be sure, there's a sizable segment of the folks who just don't believe Obama, and I don't think that documentation or the production of any additional documentation is going to put their mind at ease.
Do you get a sense that with the passage of time, some conspiracy theories change? They have any more or less adherence over time, and is there a formula to predict which way it might go?
That's a good question. I think certainly, you know, in the case of the Kennedy assassination, for example, you know, now whatever, 50 years old, you've seen some evolution in time over the directions that those conspiracy theories have taken. In the early days, the ideas tended to point to America's enemies. There must have been Soviet involvement. There must have been Cuban involvement. By the time you got to the 70s, post-Watergate, distrust of government here was rampant. And so then the idea became, well, perhaps there were elements within the U.S. government, within the CIA, within the Joint Chiefs of Staff that had a hand in this. So perhaps it's contextual or situational, and it's broadly reflective of the times in which we live.
Ken, thank you so very much. Great to talk with you.
Frank, it's been a pleasure.
Kenneth Kitts is a professor of political science at the University of North Carolina at Pembroke, author of the book Presidential Commissions and National Security, The Politics of Damage Control. Just ahead, we're going to hear about Burning Coal Theater Company and its work with student playwrights on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio. Broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.